Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court and counsel. The district court's decision to vacate the hearing officer's affirmance of Mr. Peterson's discipline under the NFL collective bargaining agreement rests on several fundamental errors of law. At its most basic level, the district court mistakes what it means for an arbitration award to fail to draw its essence from the collective bargaining agreement. The district court equated a purported failure to apply arbitration precedent with a failure to draw its essence from the CBA. But this court has held repeatedly that an alleged misinterpretation or misapplication of precedent is not tantamount to a failure to draw its essence from the CBA. The court did so in the American National Can case and most recently in the SBC case. That is true even though the court described its basis as the arbitrator's purported failure to follow the law of the shop. And the court's citation to the fact that the law of the shop is something that can be viewed as part of the CBA. But the law of the shop principle upon which the district court relied, starting 50 years ago in the Supreme Court's decision recognizing it, is a principle of deference to the arbitrator. It is not a principle of judicial second-guessing. It's particularly true when you consider the law that has been developed since that original decision, both in the Supreme Court and in numerous decisions in this court. The law is settled that an arbitrator's judgment interpreting a collective bargaining agreement and in determining the facts of a particular case must be deferred to. And the standard has been stated repeatedly. As long as the arbitrator is even arguably interpreting the collective bargaining agreement, that decision may not be second-guessed. That same
Who's the arbitrator under Article 46?
I'm sorry?
Who's the arbitrator under Article 46?
Under Article 46, the parties have agreed that all appeals, all disputes, will be heard either by the commissioner or by his designee. In this case, he designated Harold Henderson. Mr. Henderson is somebody who has served as the hearing officer in I believe, dozens of cases over the years.
So the arbitrator in the first instance, by the text of it, is the commissioner.
He may be the commissioner. He may be
in this case.
But in this case,
it's Henderson.
No, in this case, it's Mr. Henderson.
Where do we get that?
Because it was
what was the function of the Commissioner Goodell then? Just another employer like a team owner?
He is charged. It is agreed under the collective bargaining agreement that he has the authority both to impose the discipline for conduct detrimental. He also has the authority either to hear all appeals or to designate. It's set forth specifically in Article 46 to designate somebody to hear the appeal, and that hearing officer. His decision, hearing the appeal, is final and binding under the collective bargaining agreement. It makes it clear. And Your Honor, while that may be an unusual procedure, it is certainly one that is consistent with the law, particularly when one considers the nature of the kind of case that we have here, which is conduct detrimental to the integrity of the NFL. This is something that has been in the NFL collective bargaining agreement for decades. It was recently reaffirmed in 2011 when the new CBA was agreed to.
But I'm having trouble analogizing to more typical collective bargaining agreement situations. And trouble I'm having is that what if the commissioner did not respect the law of the shop? And the commissioner is not the arbitrator, and what's the arbitrator to do, and what's the judicial review of that?
Well, the arbitrator here, the hearing officer here, heard that argument, okay? And he's certainly empowered, once he has been designated, to consider the argument that the discipline imposed by the commissioner violated the so-called law of the shop. And Mr. Henderson considered that argument carefully here, And he rejected it.
No, he didn't. He ducked the issue that I'm considering, which is the retroactive invoking and application of the new policy. That's the law of the shop I was talking about.
Well, first of all, he did not, I would respectfully submit, duck the issue at all. He has two sections in his decision which he carefully considers, both the retroactivity argument presented by the union on behalf of Mr. Peterson and the so-called notice argument, which is bound up in it. And he determined that the discipline that was imposed here was not impermissibly retroactive, and he did so based on several things that have to be deferred to. First of all, he based his decision on the so-called law of the shop. He disagreed with the asserted interpretation of the Rice arbitration decision. The Players Association argued that the Rice arbitrator had held that the new policy, the Rice arbitrator had unequivocally recognized that the new policy could never be applied retroactively. Not so. That's not what the Rice arbitrator held. And as the hearing officer here distinguished the Rice case and noted that the Rice arbitration involved a question of double jeopardy, that made it different from the situation here, where the discipline imposed on Mr. Peterson was the first discipline. There was
What happened in the Brady arbitration? What's that position?
The Brady arbitration involves did not involve the personal conduct policy. It did not involve that involved conduct detrimental. There was no question, I think, of any sort of retroactivity claim in that case. The district court, which we obviously disagree with and have appealed, simply substituted his judgment for the judgment of the commissioner in terms of whether the discipline that was imposed on Mr. Brady was fair. And again, that's most fundamentally what I think is important here, and what was ignored in the district court and what I think is ignored in the Players Association's argument is the issue that was before Mr. Henderson in this case. The Players Association assert what I would describe as a hyper-technical argument about so-called retroactivity. Their argument is not based anywhere on the text of the CBA. It's not even based on the text of the personal conduct policy that they rely exclusively on, the personal conduct policy that was in place at the time that Mr. Peterson engaged in the misconduct at issue. And the issue for the hearing officer, and this goes to the question of the hearing officer's authority as well, was as stated by counsel for the Players Association. The fundamental issue was whether the discipline that was imposed in this circumstance was fair and consistent under the CBA. And it was within that context that they asserted this so-called retroactivity argument, and which the hearing officer rejected. And he did so in a reasoned analysis that considered the arbitration precedent. In fact, although the district court faults Mr. Henderson for failing to apply Rice or ignoring Rice, the hearing officer actually did apply Rice. He read Rice for the proposition that the arbitrator cited there. She said that if we didn't have the double jeopardy issue here, in other words, if this was the first discipline that had been imposed, then an arbitrator would be an arbitrator, not no less a district court, but an arbitrator would be hard pressed to vacate that discipline. And the reason is the CBA. The CBA and the personal conduct policy make clear that the commissioner's authority to impose discipline for conduct of this nature, for conduct detrimental, includes in the right to impose an indefinite suspension, and most importantly, no maximum. Fundamentally, the Players Association's argument to the hearing officer on retroactivity and on notice was based on the claim that under the so-called prior policy that was in place when Mr. Peterson engaged in the misconduct at issue, that there was a two-game maximum that could be imposed. The hearing officer disagreed with that judgment, and he did so he relied both on Rice, because the Rice arbitrator would disagree with that proposition, but also other prior arbitration precedent under the CBA, in which it was acknowledged that the parties have agreed there will be no maximum. There are maximum discipline schedules in the NFL collective bargaining agreement for things like club discipline. When it comes to commissioner discipline, there is no maximum. And as the hearing officer carefully explains in his decision here, it has been recognized in arbitration precedent that the commissioner is not bound. Just because he may issue a two-game suspension in one case, he's not bound by any principles of retroactivity or principles of notice to apply that in every case going forward.
Could you address this one portion of the district court's order where the district court says the commissioner has acknowledged that he did not have the power to retroactively apply the new policy? Quote, the policy change was forward-looking because the league is required to provide proper notice, unquote. Yet just 2 weeks later, the commissioner retroactively applied the new policy to Peterson. Could you address that part of the district court's reasoning?
I think the district court accepted the Players Association's argument about the meaning of the commissioner's testimony out of context. The testimony that he reviewed was the commissioner explaining that he was not going to apply the new policy to Mr. Rice. And the thing that gets left out when they selectively quote the commissioner's testimony, or they even is that when they say he acknowledged that he could not apply, it was forward-looking, he could not apply the personal conduct policy, they leave out the words to Rice. And they also leave out his explanation there. He said that because he had already disciplined Mr. Rice, and so he wasn't going to apply the new policy. But that's a far cry from saying that he acknowledged that under all circumstances that the policy couldn't be applied retroactively. In fact, it would be inconsistent with the fact that just 2 weeks later he did so with Mr. Peterson. Clearly, that's not what he meant when he said that in his testimony. But most fundamentally, Your Honor, that's the district court reviewing testimony, not even from this case, from another case, and coming up with his own interpretation. That is fact-finding. That is something that this court and the Supreme Court has said repeatedly that he may not do. At bottom, Your Honor, the judgment that the hearing officer made here was fact-based, and it was clearly based on in the CBA. It was based on the fact that the conduct at issue here was so egregious, and this is something that the Players Association would like to ignore. But the hearing officer explains this well. He, in rejecting their retroactivity notice argument, their two-game maximum argument, he explains quite clearly, if Mr. Peterson's discipline is more egregious than in most cases in the past, it's because his conduct was more egregious. This was not a case of an adult engaged in a domestic dispute with another adult. This was child abuse. It was child abuse that led to a criminal plea. I would submit, Your Honor, that is exactly the kind of both fact-based and textual CBA-based judgment that arbitrators make in disciplinary cases under collective bargaining agreements all the time. It was impermissible for the district court here to substitute its judgment for that determination. The decision should not have been vacated. It should have the hearing officer's decision should not have been vacated. It should have been confirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kessler.
May it please the court. Your Honors, there are three undisputed points in this record which require affirmance of the decision below. Point number one, not disputed, is that in his discipline letter, and Commissioner Goodell, Your Honor, imposed the discipline here. He was not the arbitrator. So he was just like an employer in that context, acting on behalf of the clubs. In his discipline letter, and this is in the addendum on page A26 to 27, he announces that the discipline is based on the modifications to the personal conduct policy that were announced on August 28th to establish the baseline discipline of 6 games for certain offenses. So there's no dispute that the policy he's applying, the plain meaning of this discipline letter, is it was the new policy. Second undisputed point, it cannot be disputed that the new policy was new. Your Honor, to go back to the last argument that you had, you only have retroactivity because it is new. What the arbitrator tried to say is, well, maybe it's not new. That is implausible in his own brand of industrial due process. How do I know? Because in Appendix 27, which is the new policy, which in effect is the essence of the CBA, because the policy is the way in which the league gives notice to the players as to how conduct detrimental is going to be imposed, this is what the commissioner wrote in his new policy. And we will increase the sanctions imposed on NFL personnel who violate our policies. That's on A27. Then on A29, in discussing the 6-game minimum, they state this is enhanced discipline, enhanced, new sanctions increased, enhanced, which is effective immediately. Mr. Nash said we don't rely on the plain language of the CBA through the policy. It was effective immediately, which means going forward, not effective retroactively to conduct that can't be there. The third point, Your Honor, is that there's not disputed, and this is in the 28J letter sent on September 28th to this court about the Brady decision. The Akin Gump firm representing the NFL said the CBA requirement for which the NFLPA cites Brady, that players are entitled to notice of prohibited conduct and potential discipline, is not in dispute. So, Your Honor, what we have here, it's undisputed it's a new policy. It's undisputed it was applied retroactively, and it's undisputed that notice was required. And what Mr. Nash tries to say is, well, it wasn't that big a change. What happened, Your Honor, is the arbitrator ducked the issue. Just as you said, he recognized that he couldn't find notice for a policy applied retroactively with new sanctions. So what he did is he said, well, maybe it's not a new policy.
You invited it.
No, Your Honor, we did not invite that.
The letter of appeal. The argument that this was somehow went beyond the issues you presented to the arbitrator is the letter to Goodell was the notice of appeal.
Right, Your Honor. Now, here's the difference. That's not the notice of appeal. And this is the same confusion. No, let me explain, please, if I can. Okay, so Commissioner Goodell did not sit as the arbitrator. So initially, there was a letter of what was presented to him regarding the discipline. Okay,
that's only half of it. Then
yes.
We have most of the transcript before Arbitrator Henderson is you and Mr. Nash arguing about the law of the shop under the old policy. And you taking the view that there was a 2-game max, and Mr. Nash taking the opposing view, and both of you submitting prior NFL precedents supporting your point.
Let me explain, right? Your Honor, why that was.
First, is that a fair? I mean, I've read it. Isn't that a fair?
It is absolutely fair that we argued about the 2-game maximum under the old policy. And let me explain why.
And submitted supporting law of the shop precedent.
Yes, but let me explain for what purpose. Okay, the purpose of that was the following. Okay, the NFL argued the new policy was not new. In order to show that the new policy was new and was an increase in sanctions and changed the issue, we had to show, well, the old policy was different. So we argued extensively, Your Honor, that under the old policy, and there had been 21 consecutive cases, it had never been more than 2 games. And Commissioner Goodell then issued his statement, which I'm going to read as follows. This was a public statement he made. It's Appendix 8AA4. This is what he said. We needed to get those policies in a position where the standard for that kind of a violation has to be much higher. This is compared to the 2 games.
What page is that?
This is Appendix 8, Appendix 884.
84?
884.
884.
Yes. And he says, and that's why 3 weeks later we raised that standard and said this is not going to be acceptable behavior. And when it occurs, it's a minimum six game or the standard six game. In other words, what we were debating before Mr. Henderson is the arbitrator is that this was a new policy being raised, which under the notice requirements, which are undisputed. And I want to be clear about that. This has nothing to do with just Judge Jones and Rice saying notice is required. In fact, every single NFL case submitted on both sides says notice is required. That's why it's not disputed. So this is not like a case where there's some dispute what is the law of the shop. And the reason for this is notice is so fundamental that the case law is, even when a CBA is silent, and this is in the Brady decision that Your Honor mentioned, even when it's silent, it's implied there must be notice of both the discipline and the consequences. And this was a change. Now, Your Honor, it's also important, and this
Did
isn't...
Did Henderson say that there was notice that he could have received up to six games under the old policy?
Yeah, and that is, Your Honor, the point here is that it is undisputed that in the commissioner's testimony that moving to a six-game minimum, which is what this did, a six-game presumptive baseline, is different from no baseline and every prior case being a two-game maximum, and that's why he announces
it would be different if there had been a two-game maximum. But Henderson said there wasn't a two-game maximum, at least as to child abusers.
Okay. Well, no, Your Honor. First of all, there was no prior case about child abuse.
Right.
But what happened is that the history it established under the domestic violence policy, and there was a requirement which Commissioner Goodell testified in Rice, which is in this the Rice record was submitted in this record because instead of calling the commissioner as a witness, he already had testified to this. So it was accepted as full in testimony in this case. In Rice, he testified, I must be consistent with the past. I am bound to follow prior precedent. And that's why Judge Jones said he admitted that even under Article 46, he was not free to retroactively apply the new six-game minimum to Ray Rice. That's how that came about. That was undisputed until he changed his mind 3 weeks later. And the problem, Your Honor, is, and this has to do with the structure, the right remedy here is as follows. What arbitrator Henderson should have found, okay, if he wasn't imposing his own brand of industrial justice, is that clearly there has to be notice. Clearly this is retroactive. So this...
Notice of what?
Oh, notice...
Notice that's critical is the notice of what discipline may be imposed.
Yes, and the idea that it moved, as the commissioner said, to a six-game presumptive baseline, which he called...
That wasn't done until after the fact, right?
Yes, that's why there was no notice.
No, but except what Mr. Henderson did, the record he decided it on, there was adequate notice as to his record.
Now let me explain why that's wrong, Your Honor. So under the CBA structure, and this is the clear language of the CBA, the only person who has authority to impose discipline, this is paragraph 15 of the NFL player contract, which is part of the CBA, and Article 46 of the CBA, the only person is the commissioner of the NFL. So the commissioner of the NFL here chose not to use the old policy and impose discipline. He chose wrongly, against notice requirements, to use the new policy. So what was the correct remedy, Your Honor? Mr. Henderson should have sent this back to the commissioner to impose discipline under the old policy, and that's what should be done now. Mr. Henderson didn't have the authority to decide discipline under the old policy in the first instance.
So you're admitting that the district court should not be affirmed as the remedy.
No, the district court remanded. The district court did exactly the right thing. He vacated the arbitration award and remanded for further proceedings consistent with the CBA. Those further proceedings should be, Your Honor, and you can make this clear, okay, a new...
You get that from your brief.
Well, I'm making it very clear now, Your Honor. I apologize. What should be done is that the commissioner should issue a new determination of discipline under the old policy. There's no statute of limitations in the CBA for him doing that. So he can go back and do it right now and remand under the old policy without the six-game presumption. And then the commissioner, who is the only one charged in the CBA for doing this, could decide, would he have opposed 2 games, 4 games, 3 games, and then that could get appealed under the CBA. This court doesn't know what the commissioner would do. Harold Henderson doesn't know what the commissioner would do if he was told he had to apply the old policy without the presumption. Because what we know from Rice is that Commissioner Goodell unequivocally said he thought he was limited to 2 games under the old policy.
What is your best labor arbitration circuit court authority for this kind of reversal of an arbitrator?
Okay, I rely on two.
Usurping, in effect, the employer's prerogative.
Oh, I don't think it's usurping the employer's prerogative, but let me tell you what I think. This is... Henderson did, yes, yes. Boise Cascade is actually a comprehensive discussion of what is essence of the agreement violations versus what is deferring to the arbitrator for construing the CBA. And what Boise Cascade says, for example, is that it's a violation of the essence of the agreement when the plain language says something and the arbitrator is disregarding it. That's clear, for example, with the new policy being new and his refusal to reach the retroactivity argument, because even though it says it's new and even though it says it's effective immediately going forward and not there, he ignored that. And he also ignored the language that only the commissioner can set the discipline. And number two, it says if it's silent, if the CBA is silent, then you must look at the evidence of the law of the shop and the intent of the parties. Here, the evidence was unequivocal that the law of the shop was only one way on notice, and they now concede that. And more importantly, the intent of the parties is established by the admission of the commissioner here under oath that he knew he had to give notice and couldn't apply this policy going forward, and he thought he was bound to 2 games under the old policy.
Just to clarify, I'm inferring that if the commissioner had not invoked the new policy, there would be no notice issued.
Correct.
So that that's why if.
What about, I'm sorry.
If Henderson had been the initial decision maker, we wouldn't have a notice and policy problem.
Yes, this was created by their structure. And what we have.
On remand, there's no new notice required.
Correct. Now, I believe, Your Honor, though, and we'll see what happens, we believe the commissioner understands he's bound to 2 games.
What
if it's the old policy, but if I'm sorry. Sorry, Your Honor.
I wanted to ask you about this law of the shop in the McDaniel case that the arbitrator cites.
Yes.
Where he says it's part of the law of the shop that the commissioner is not forever bound to historical precedent and that he may adjust in future cases if he decides that the former discipline was insufficient. Why isn't that part of the law of the shop would allow, even if it had been a 2-game norm,
Your Honor,
higher.
That is an interesting question. It has nothing to do with the notice issue we're on appeal for here, but that law of the shop, it has to do with if the old policy is applied, could he possibly impose 3 games instead of 2? That's what that issue...
The difference between applying the old policy and saying, I've changed my mind, I'm now going to impose 6, and saying, I've got a new policy, I'm now going to...
Because we believe, Your Honor, that the commissioner has already indicated he doesn't believe he has the flexibility to go to 6. And I'll give you one last illustration of that that's very important. So since this happened, something came up under the old policy again for another player, Ray Hardy, and Harold Henderson, the arbitrator, sat again. And Harold Henderson, the same arbitrator, ruled, I can't apply the 6-game minimum to this player, and he reduced the discipline of the commissioner down when he tried to apply a 10-game penalty. He reduced it down to 4 games. The only reason I mention that has to all happen again here by the commissioner. This court doesn't know how many games it should be. Okay, Harold Henderson can't decide that in the first instance. The commissioner has to decide that as to what this limitation is. So it's a fair issue for remand before the arbitrators as to whether it could go up beyond two or not. But that hasn't been presented at all in this record with regard to that.
Where in the record is what you just talked about the admission that doesn't have the discretion?
Okay, that admission, Your Honor, is in the Ray Rice proceeding, and I'll tell you two places where it is. First, in A61, Judge Jones summarized his testimony as follows, summarized Commissioner Goodell's testimony. Recognizing that even under the broad deference afforded to him through Article 46, he, that's Commissioner Goodell, could not retroactively apply the new presumptive penalty to Rice. That was her summary of it. The actual testimony, Your Honor, which I also have.
Is this the same testimony that I quoted for Mr. Nash earlier, where he said, all right, he says you're taking this out of context, so hey, we'll have to look at it, but give us the page.
Let me give you the context.
Okay. Give us the page number first. Okay.
So the actual page number is in the Rice transcript, which I just had out here, handed to me by one of my colleagues. Did I leave that? I'm sorry, just 1 second. Yeah, it's A427 is the Rice transcript, and this specific reference by the commissioner, which I did have out, but I'm afraid I'm having... here it is. So this is on page 100 of the transcript, which is A452. And he said as follows. He was talking in response. He's talking about why he changed the policy. And this starts on page 99 of the transcript. And he says, yes, I didn't feel that the policy, the personal conduct policy, particularly in the domestic violence sexual assault area, was consistent with the values of the NFL, and we needed to reevaluate that. Then he goes on to say, and of course, discipline was an aspect of that too, which we're required to give proper notification if you are going to go forward, which we did. And then he explains, I called Ray Rice and told him the new policy.
You're off the page and you're out of time and there's a question.
I'm sorry. A452, and that whole discussion by Commissioner Goodell as to why he would not apply the new policy to Ray Rice. Okay? Any other questions? Thank you, Your Honor. And thank you for the little extra time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Nash, you have
1.5 minutes.
Make it 3 minutes. That's...
Your Honor, the reason that you didn't see this new request as to how the case should be dealt with is that it had never been made before. The request that the arbitrator should have sent it back to the commissioner. That was not...
It was not made to Henderson.
It was not made to Mr. Henderson. In fact, as I think it was noted here, and it was clear, you noted both in the notice of appeal and in the arguments from counsel at the hearing, the request to Mr. Henderson was... You, not Commissioner Goodell, you, Mr. Henderson, should assess the discipline that was imposed here under the prior policy.
And make it 2 games, you mean?
And under their argument that it should not be more than 2 games. Now, Mr. Henderson rejected that argument. But clearly, they never argued you should... Let's be clear, it's a hyper-technical argument. We have this retroactivity argument, even though the hearing officer found there was no notice problem, even though the CBA plainly provided the authority for the discipline at issue here, they have this hyper-technical argument that the discipline should be overturned. But they said reduce it to 2 games. They didn't say vacate it. And moreover, when they got into the, even in this court, even in the briefing here, and even on remand before Arbitrator Henderson, they didn't say send it back to the commissioner. They want it vacated. Let's be clear. They want a get out of jail free card. They want to say because this new policy, as they describe it, contained a new baseline going forward, somehow that imposed a limitation on the commissioner's authority. And more importantly, on the arbitrator's authority to assess the facts of this case under the prior policy. Now, as to notice,
what's the practical implications if the district court would be reversed?
I think the
we're in a new season, and the player is playing, and so
the only practical implication is that he's already served the suspension that was at issue. It's just the amount of the fine that he'd be required to pay. There's no other practical.
Because the fine is per game?
Yeah, and we've agreed not to collect the fine pending this court's review of the matter.
Okay, but and the fine would be six.
No, the amount still owed is three games. It's a three game fine. He served three games of the suspension without pay, and there are three games that would be remaining in terms of the fine. But I guess the fundamental response I would make to all of the arguments that you just heard, you didn't hear anything about the CBA. You heard arguments like defy the essence of the CBA, which, by the way, is just a way of arguing the merits. That's not the standard of draw its essence. It's not, you don't get to come into federal court and say, well, this is not consistent with the essence of the CBA, because that's just an invitation to just reweigh the merits of the case.
It's common in labor law, though.
Excuse me?
It is common in labor law.
No, that's true, but what is well established in labor law is the merits of that ruling as to whether the CBA is violated is for the arbitrator. It's not for the district court to do anew. So that's absolutely the case here. And you heard no reference to the CBA. The only document, the only text of anything that so-called violated the essence of the CBA was the citation to the new personal conduct policy, which is not part of the CBA. And what you didn't hear, most importantly for the notice and retroactivity claim, is the CBA itself. And I would refer here most basically both on the notice and on the retroactivity claim. Because after all, if there was no two-game maximum, there is no the ultimate question of whether Mr. Peterson's discipline was unfair or inconsistent goes away. And again, their retroactivity and notice arguments were in that context. I just refer the court to Mr. Peterson's player contract, where he's clearly on notice at A-017 that he would even under the prior policy, that he was subject to the discipline at issue here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The case has certainly been thoroughly briefed, and the argument has been helpful in winnowing out complicated issues, and we'll take it under advisement.